Welcome to the Man Cave Podcast with Dan Casper.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to this episode of the Man Cave Podcast, brought to you by our good friends from Hy-Vee and Toys and Ford. Dan Casper here with you, and we're just going to jump into it because, well, we've got the boys back. Catching up with the boys from 217 South Mills. How you guys doing, Bill, Joe?
Doing well.
Doing good.
Well,
glad to be back.
I don't know. You guys are going to be sweating right now. It's hot in this studio.
Yeah, so all the windows and doors open.
Yeah, I was glad to see that door open. Big guys don't like heat.
No, and I'm struggling. I've been in here for 4 or 5 hours right now, so I kind of want to bust down a window over here and build one for the outside. So,
can you put a window unit back over there?
Are
you an exterior wall?
I think we need to redo this whole thing. We got to get like a window unit there, but also like a spigot of cabin coffee because Thursday mornings are really rough for me for some reason, and I need that extra coffee.
I hear you.
To get through there. So, and then whenever you guys come in, we'll just refill it. Delivery service that way too.
So. Let's do it.
Everything's going awesome with the pod. I know last time we talked to you, the Alvarez episode hadn't dropped yet, just some teasers, but now it's out there. And
yeah, we got Coach Alvarez out there. We just dropped this week the shoebox, the quote unquote scandal. So yeah, just a lot of good stories. But yeah, people are enjoying it. People are picking it up, sharing it. We're growing. We're excited with what the future holds. Already talking about some possible other trips in the future to meet up with some former and current players.
Nice. That's you guys are doing an awesome job. It's a lot of fun to listen to. And again, check it out on all the podcasting platforms out there too. And make sure you follow their Facebook pages and social media ones too, because they got the video clips teasers out there too, so you can see them in action.
Yep,
so
that's been exciting. And we got some more exciting clips that'll probably be coming out in the next week or two that are from back in the past.
You can see Joe get upset with Bill or anything like that.
that never happened.
So this week in football has kind of been a big week, you know, free agency-wise. You got guys moving on from different teams and such. You know, kind of keeping it with the Packer one. I know there's been a joke kind of running around with, like, Aaron Jones leaving getting cut by Green Bay, and then goes over to Minnesota, and that's always kind of sparked, you know, oh, another former Packer going over to Minnesota. Do players, you think, look at that, you know, like say, like a former Packer, former Badger, maybe in a transfer portal, do you think there's a lot of players that really pay attention to rivalries like that where they wouldn't go to a team, you know, as much? I know Donald Driver was like, I'm not going to go anywhere else, you know, sort of thing. I feel like he's the exception to the norm in a lot of that. Do you think that's a bigger fan thing, or do you think players really even pay attention to that?
I honestly think that if they're going to pay you money, I don't care where you're going to go. Like, you're trying to set up yourself and your family because that window in the NFL is so small. So you're trying to make as much money as you possibly can to better yourself and the well-being of your family. Now, as far as loyalty, I don't know. I think college is a little different because we weren't getting paid.
Right.
So, yeah, the idea of ever transferring to the University of Minnesota, that was never going to freaking happen.
Yeah.
Ever.
And I think, just like Joe said, college, as we've said many times on this show, college is a family, where NFL is a business. And I think no players have animosity towards the others that go to another team. I mean, when I got cut from the Packers, it wasn't about money. It was about proving the Packers wrong. So I wanted my first three calls going to the NFC North. But like Joe said, at the end of somebody's career or towards the end of the career, you have two things you're looking at, either making the most amount of money you can or finding a team that you think has a chance at winning a championship before you're done.
Mm-hmm. So you think a lot of that, too, with Aaron Jones going to Minnesota is motivation to prove the Packers wrong?
I mean, I think first would probably be, I'd like to know if other teams offered him the same amount of money.
Right.
If he had same offers from other teams, yeah, I think it'd be proving him wrong. Mm-hmm. Just like Favre, you know, went to the Jets to ultimately come back to Minnesota to prove him wrong and ended up having one of his best career stats his last year in Minnesota. So, yeah, there's a lot of being upset, feeling you made a bad business decision, and I want to prove what you should have done.
Right. I mean, we keep hearing phrases, it's a business, you know, and I mean, it sucks as a fan because he seemed like that was a player that represented the G, right? Was that something, you know, at Wisconsin and Green Bay, that was talked about representing the W, representing the G. Was that something that was kind of preached to you guys by coaches or such? Or
I would say yes. I think, you know, obviously every time you're in front of a camera or in the microphone, you know, you never wanted to, one, embarrass the university, embarrass the coaching staff, and embarrass yourself or embarrass the players. Mm-hmm. Those are the four things that you're constantly talking about. So all the questions that the media would answer you, it's all like, yeah, the defense is really good. We're hoping we can withstand their potential. It's just basically a recording in your head to not give them any bulletin board material. That mm-hmm. was the way that we were coached up on it at Wisconsin. But as far as loyalty to the program that we were a part of at college level, oh yeah, mm-hmm. it was 1,000% committed to playing for the Badgers. Mm-hmm.
And I'd say in the NFL, the Packers are a different breed. Similar to like the New York Yankees in baseball. There was any other team I was on or talked to guys that were on, most of the community, unless you were the franchise player, didn't even know who you were if you went to the mall. Where in Green Bay, if the practice squad guy went to the mall, everybody wants to stop him. They know every mm-hmm. stat. And during my time in Green Bay, before the cell phone era, the Packers actually had a voice message machine at the office. And our own line coach brought it into our meeting one night. He had like 20-some calls on the voicemail because we had an O-line dinner and it was fans just saying like how many drinks everybody had. One guy, when the fan wanted a picture, saw somebody smoke and put a cigarette in his mouth as a joke. There was like five voicemails about this person with a cigarette in their mouth like three nights before a game. So wow. Packer, as a Packer, you have to watch a lot more what you do in public because people's eyes are different. But other teams, I was on the Redskins where I think LeVar Arrington was probably the only guy that got noticed in public. In Charlotte, Jake Delhomme got noticed when he went out in public, but you could walk around wherever you want. Green Bay, you can't do that.
Yeah. I to kind of go off that, too, for the Green Bay perspective and for a Badger perspective, too, you know, Aaron Rodgers, when he went to the Jets, a lot of people were saying media coverage is, you know, can he handle that media compared to a small town Green Bay and all that. And part of me, though, was kind of wondering, is it a different mindset? Because if you're in Green Bay, maybe a smaller media, but aren't you almost treated like a godlike, like when you're walking around, kind of like what you were saying, you're like,
absolutely,
everybody recognizes you. So yeah. It's kind of almost a double-edged sword.
Green Bay's totally, totally different, and it's the opposite of what people would think when it comes to media. Like, I told people when I got to other teams, we'd have the news on at night in Green Bay for a half hour. Then the next half hour was a training camp report where they mm-hmm. did a whole half-hour show on what happened that day in training camp. And for instance, my rookie year, I ended up getting into a fight, and that half-hour segment was basically, it looked like HBO Sports breaking down the fight. They were talking about who threw what punch, who got the better of each other, and I'm just like, they are on top of you with everything. Kevin Stemke, our teammate at Wisconsin, he came to Green Bay as a free agent punter, and the first day Brett Favre showed up when the vets arrived, Stemke had probably 100 reporters around him because he was born and raised in Green Bay. Mm. And I think he was staying at his parents' house at that time, driving over to Lambeau for practice. And, yeah, it's a different animal in Green Bay.
Yeah, it just feels like, you know, I've never experienced it, obviously. But, yeah, it's a bigger media. They're paying more attention. But from a fan perspective, there's got to be something that plays with you, that pressure that I go out, I'm going to get recognized. And, you know, you don't have that privacy in a smaller town.
Yeah, and you sort of have to get used to it. And I think, like, I've heard of different players getting bad names. And then I started witnessing where people, like Frank Winters was a good, for instance. I hung with Frank quite a bit. And if we went out to dinner, Frank would be cutting his first piece of steak and have five people coming up. Can you sign an autograph? Mm-hmm. Can you take a picture? And when he'd politely be like, can you wait till after dinner? He'd say that enough. All of a sudden the next day is, oh, Frank Winters was a jerk. He wouldn't talk to me. Well, if you take it in the context, you were interrupting his dinner and he right. was more than happy to do it after dinner. So yeah, every player with the Packers knows once you leave your house, you're going to be recognized. You're going to be talked to. And that's why a lot of players, like I'm sure in Aaron Rodgers, he goes out when he wants to go out. When he doesn't want to go out, he probably has other people mm-hmm. getting his groceries, filling up his car where he could just go house, right. Lambeau back.
Yeah. And now, go ahead, Josh.
I also think, Bill, you mentioned that the reception after playing football, especially for the Packers, is much different than other teams welcoming you back.
Absolutely. Like, even myself, who was just there for a couple of years, mostly a backup, had an opportunity to play a little bit here and there. it's still, I'm part of that Packer family. Where the other teams, they're coming around with some of their alumni, but what the Packers do for the alumni, and even the way the community enjoys it. I mean, there's times I've been done with the Packers for almost 21 years, I think, and I still get calls to come to Lambeau for a meet and greet or do this speaking event on behalf of the Packers because the public is still interested in hearing. If you're a former Packer, you're still held to a high standard, where I know guys that have two Super Bowl rings with other teams, and they're like, you get calls to go to golf outings and to speak? Like, I've never gotten a call. And I'm like, you have two Super Bowl rings. You were a starter for 10 years. Like,
right.
How's nothing happening? But that's where Green Bay fans just love their team. And you see, like, the Packers everywhere, stuff like all over the country, all over the world are Packer fans.
Is that similar to Wisconsin for the Badgers? I mean, because you guys have talked about, I mean, Barry remembers everybody, it seems like. Would you say it's a similar approach with the Badger football team?
It is the welcoming part back. The Badgers are really good at bringing us back. They have golf outings. I mean, I'm constantly getting emails. This is the event going on. Hey, if you can make it, register this, that. So, I mean, that part is really cool. But you're able to kind of hide. It's like, other than this show and a couple people knowing that I played for the Badgers, even at the coffee shop, otherwise no one really knew. It was like, he's a big guy. Did you play football? You know, like, that's kind of a common question. But other than that, like, I was able to kind of hide in Eau Claire, you know, pretty quietly for a long time, you know. And then obviously now with the coffee shop and the podcast, you know, it's come to more of a regular conversation. But for the most part, for 20 years I lived here, it wasn't like I was walking around with a Rose Bowl ring and a shirt that says I played for the Badgers, because, you know, I did so much stuff after that was more important. So,
But as you hear on our podcast, Joe is probably walking around wearing a shoebox shirt.
Yeah.
Because that's most of his T-shirts back in the day.
Well, I still have some. Like, it's, yeah, absolutely.
And we're going to get some more. Maybe we'll get Dan a shoebox shirt, too.
Yeah.
But
you got some swag. You got a store online, too.
Absolutely. Yeah. We should talk to his shoebox to get a shoebox shirt on that store.
I agree.
Work a deal.
I got to ask, because I was looking at your store. Shout out Resonance, Brandon, in case
they've been doing a heck of a job working with this. So.
What's the shirt, T-shirt you were wearing? Was it OWAU or what?
OWUA.
What is that?
Overwork, underappreciated.
All right.
And that's kind of a standard offensive lineman. We don't get any of the credit. We don't get anything. The only time we ever get notoriety is by your running back, because they're grateful for what you do. But other than that, unless you're holding or can get called back on a penalty, you know what? The less, as an offensive lineman, that you knew about us, the better. The better our job was that we were doing, because if no one knows who you are, then you're doing all right.
Actually, just remind me, I had a question from a listener that was actually from a couple weeks ago, so I'm going to bring it up since we're talking a little offensive line. This was from, his name's Dave. He said, could you ask the two guys, when you talk to them about football, when you're on the field, who's in charge of making substitutions? And who do you look at on the sideline to see if you stay in or out of that game? And how can you guys even hear the coaches speaking from the sidelines?
We never got substituted. So we didn't have to worry about that, even if you were tired or winded. Maybe if your leg was falling off, they maybe didn't get back up. But there was no substitution for the offensive line. And the quarterback was always the leader. And you shut your mouth in the huddle, and he called the play, and was not much. And let's face it, I was just trying to breathe. I was just trying to live. I didn't have a lot of conversation, because I was just trying to, like, take air in before the next play.
To Joe's point, and I love when people ask that question, I always say, like, we don't come off the field. Like, we better put up, like, 30-plus points ahead of the other team to even get a chance, consideration in the fourth quarter to come off the field. And I've said before, I was a horrible trash talker, but the best trash talking I ever did, the position that does come off the field that we face, is D linemen. And D linemen always tap the top of their helmet to let the sideline know they need a break. So whenever I pancake somebody, I'd always be a good sportsman and offer my hand to pick them up. But if they didn't take my hand, I'd always just say, all you got to do is tap the top of your head and they'll send you a replacement. And like, get out of here. You don't want any more of this. Like, just tap your head and they'll send somebody else in to play for you.
That's awesome.
I find it so weird to me that you are a horrible trash talker when you consistently waterboard people with words all the time. Like, how could you not be a good trash talker?
Because I was huffing and puffing so much on the field, I couldn't, my brain wasn't comprehending what I wanted to say.
I completely understand that now, but, like, for how much you talk, two to three, see, three, you just, after a while, the guy's like, all right, I need to get out, because
he's talking too much.
I just can't stand this guy anymore.
Did you guys ever have a good trash talker on your team? Anybody stand out to you?
on our I'd say not. I wouldn't say anybody on the O line. Gibby, maybe every once in a while would get into it if, like, we were having, like, I remember one game, I forget who we were playing, but somebody, they were trying to really twist on Ron's ankles in the puddle, in the pile, and Gibby was really getting on him. But I'd say on our team, probably our corners. We had Fletch and Eccles, Jamar Fletcher and Mike Eccles. I mean, those guys, they put up, but they'd shut people up as well.
And don't you kind of need that swagger to play that position?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And they had a similar coaching experience as us. They got coached hard by Phil Elmation at Wisconsin, and they had the talent. They made it work out there. But, yeah, they definitely talked trash. Like, I remember Fletch's deal. Our corners never switched sides in Wisconsin.
Okay.
We always had a left corner, right corner. They never traveled with the player. And before the, I think it was Michigan State game, maybe our junior year, 98 or 99. Plaxico Burress was with Michigan State, and Fletch asked Coach Alvarez to follow Plaxico wherever he goes. Coach is like, all right, if you're going to talk the talk, you better walk the walk. And, yeah, I think he picked Plaxico off like three times in that game.
Nice.
And Fletch was running his mouth like, wow. Like, once once Fletch got a pick, he'd start jabbing people.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. And I also think it's easier, like, once you own a guy, once you've worn him down to the point where you watch him just give up and you know you own the guy, at that point in time, I think it's probably a good time to, you know, run your mouth a little bit. But, like, for the most part, man, I just wanted to try to live.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Because we saw that as old linemen. I mean, you pancake a guy over and over and over, you could just see him look demoralized. But at the same time, too, we're tired as hell from doing it, huffing and puffing.
But we'll never say that we're tired. I mean, obviously. Like,
true.
Oh, yeah, but we're dying.
Right.
Absolutely.
Besides offensive linemen, what was the other position group you guys liked hanging around with, or what always kind of was like maybe a unique group?
I say Wisconsin. That was the weird thing. At Wisconsin, we hung around with everybody, and we talked about that on the show. We talked about it in the post interview with Coach Alvarez. It was just position groups didn't matter. I'd say in the NFL, everything was basically hanging out by position groups. There'd be times like O-line and D-line to get together, but I don't know. I think for my time, my experiences, the most fun I had, other than the fun joking with O-line, is hanging around DBs. Like, I remember I did a radio show once with Mike McKenzie.
Oh, geez,
and it was down in Milwaukee. So we had, like, a limo that took us down to Milwaukee. Dude wore sunglasses the whole time, sunglasses the whole show. And I'm like, Mike, should I put sunglasses on, too? Like, what's going on here? Like, is there something I don't know? But, no, they're just – I think DBs are just outgoing people, so,
I know a lot of people – or I should say a lot, but there's a few fans where they just like, oh, he just trash talks a lot. But I honestly feel like for the defensive back, you almost have to have that swagger to go up against wide receivers and play with that mentality.
And the big thing is I love people that trash talk, but you just better – Back it up.
Yep.
You can't talk trash the first play of the game and then get beat, you know, four times or get beat deep. So anybody that's trash talking, it's part of the game, but you better put up as well.
Was there an annoying thing during a game that sometimes a player would do? So, like, you know, for some people, you know, if it's a first down, somebody's already signaling first down, but they may be 2 yards short. You know, you hear some fans saying that's annoying, or maybe a corner gets burned consistently and then he makes one play and then he's jumping around and celebrating, and you know, you get fans kind of saying, dude, you made one play, sort of thing. As a player, was there anything that annoyed you from what maybe an opponent did to you guys, or maybe a teammate or something?
I just think that you get a first down and you stand up, like, it's similar to what you said, and the way Coach Alvarez always says, act like you've been there because it's your freaking job. You know, it's a first down. It's going to be plenty more. You get to into the end zone, that's the expectation. So that was kind of how we went about our business, and it is annoying now watching, like, the flops that are going on and some of the stupid things. Yeah, like, it's a first down. That's your job. You're getting paid millions of dollars. Okay, great. This is what you're supposed to be doing.
Right.
So I find that annoying even now. I'm like, come on. Act like you've been there.
And I agree with Joe. I think it's more today's era and us being done looking, watching it from the outside, getting more annoyed over that stuff. And I think back when we played, everybody was more blue collar, and it was more of a business, a job doing it. Like, I think in our whole career, I don't ever recall, well, I was probably sucking water and huffing and puffing on the sidelines when our defense was on the field. But on offense, I don't ever recall anybody showboating. I think in our whole time, John Sigmund was probably the only one that ever gave the first down signal, but it was the first down to seal the win against Penn State to guarantee going back to the second Rose Bowl. So it was, like, sort of deserving. We even had moments when Ron was leading up to the rushing record, we knew after the Iowa game, he broke the record. He got the Heisman before we went to the Rose Bowl, and we were begging him, all the linemen, to do the Heisman pose at the Rose Bowl because we felt like if he did that, that was representing us mm-hmm. because, like, obviously we would have blocked for him to get in the end zone, scores a touchdown, do the Heisman pose, and we were going to take the credit for it. And he was just being humble, didn't want to do it. But Ron was also into watching WWF, now WWE, with yeah. us. So we convinced him to do – I forget who the wrestler was, but it was like the X going down on the hips. Yep, yep. And after one of the touchdowns, he did that, and everybody was like, oh, he's doing a gang sign or something like that. Oh, we're geez. Like, no, we were watching WWF. Like, he did that for us. So got a kick out of it.
Now, if you would have done Shawn Michaels' heartbreak kick, kid, you know, with the stretch and like
exactly yeah that would have been exciting.
Speaking of, you know, kind of with that, with Ron Dane and that, what was the lead up for to that game, maybe the week of preparation? Was it talked about a
the
lot
Iowa, the Iowa yeah, game with the record
with the record, was it talked a lot about in the meetings? Or
I'll start and say it was a game that was probably the most. Everyone gets nervous before a game. Everybody has butterflies. And mm-hmm. we say, if you don't have butterflies, something's wrong.
Yeah.
You don't want to be, you know, thrown up and sick and that nervous, but you have to have butterflies. That game was probably the most nervous I was ever in a football game because we knew it lied on us. I was coming off an injury as well to my ankle, so, like, I didn't know if I could play or how long I could play. But we used to go to Mickey's Dairy Bar right across from the stadium, and that whole season they had the ticking down of his numbers. Mm. So like 4 weeks before, we'd be at Mickey's being like, wow, that's a lot of yards we got to get in four games. But then leading up to, I forget how many yards he needed, it was a little over 100, and we're like, it's definitely doable, but you're staring at that number the whole time. So mm-hmm. yeah, amongst O-line, it was definitely talked about. And yeah. I think coaches knew we want to run the ball. Like, don't, like, we don't care if it's fourth and three or third and long, like mm-hmm. hand it off to Ron.
Right. Kind of the same.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, I was the pressure increased not from the outside, but it was more internally for us mm-hmm. because we wanted to do a good job and we wanted Ron to break the record because in that way it solidified our history also.
Right.
You know, so because obviously Ron couldn't do it without us. And I think that the pressure was put on by us, not by the coaching staff, not by Ron, because Ron would never say, like, all right, hey, man, I need 100 yards. Like, what is it going to take? No, Ron wasn't that way. He's humble. So mm-hmm. the pressure that we put on was ourselves, and rightfully so, because you hold yourself to a higher standard, and you want that as much as the win and as everything else, just to solidify his place in history and yours.
What was the reaction like, you guys personally, when it happened? Like, the play as it happened?
It was unbelievable.
Yeah, the stadium was loud as could be, and some of the best pictures weren't even from the media, and I don't know if I still have them, but it was family pictures, taking pictures from the stands down. In the whole stadium, they handed out white towels with mm-hmm. Ron's number and name, and I think whatever the record was they had to break, and everybody held the white towel up as soon as they mm-hmm. broke it, and the whole stadium was just white.
Nice.
So it was just.
Didn't they put his name up on the stadium that game too?
On the facade, I think. After it happened.
After it happened.
Because they called timeout, they kept the ball, all that stuff, and then they dropped the mm-hmm. cover over the Dane 33 on the side of the stadium. So,
cool.
Yeah. So just all that was impressive, knowing mm-hmm. that we had a hand in helping them do it and being a part of it.
And it seems like from you guys' conversations here too, I mean, if there was a guy that was going to break it, nobody better than Dane because of his humbleness and how much he appreciated you guys.
Absolutely. Just a quiet guy. And I mean, even to this day, you go talk to the guy. I mean, I think I'd have a big head if I was Ron Dane, but to this day, he's just as normal as can be, humble, mm-hmm. quiet, not walking around banging his chest and making an ass of himself. He's just a solid guy. Mm-hmm. You know?
I think I do have a bigger head than Ron for Ron breaking the record and us helping him do it. So probably. I make sure everybody knows that we helped him do it.
Absolutely.
I love it. Well, I know we're getting close to draft time and such, so I want to save some of those questions for when we do our pod, when we're at Cabin Coffee here mm-hmm. in a couple weeks here. I know you kind of talked about it with your cardboard in your shoes over there too. So
yep, we got some funny stories to break out. Yeah. Even some funnier draft stories and stuff like that. So yeah, we're gonna have an exciting show.
Yeah, definitely.
As a matter of fact, I think Bill has cardboard in his shoes today because he, you know, next to me when we're out in public, he tries to be taller. Just,
I try and get as close to eye level with Joe as possible. Yeah. Like, I don't want to be the short guy.
Come on, you're the baby badger. You got to wear it with pride.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, before I let you go, because we've got a new flavor of the month coming
next
up.
Next month
too?
Is we're going to have it's a brambleberry. So it has features our white coffee. It's got strawberry, raspberry, and blackberry. And it's
I remember it from last year very well. Yes.
Say brambleberry 10 times fast.
Brambleberry, brambleberry, brambleberry. See, I'm Polish. It just rolls off my tongue.
You're a pro, though, with this coffee stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm saying we got to get the spigot, or something set up in here, a roaster and that.
I like that.
There you go.
Really make this into the man cave in here.
I think this is the way to go. We need to figure out how to do this.
We can do it. We can set it up.
Perfect.
So, I mean, if we got to take this wall down, that's where my desk is. We'll expand it.
Perfect. Let's do it.
Put a spigot for coffee and an air conditioning unit right in there.
Yeah, absolutely.
We should put it that way for the guy. Who's the guy next door that fell, like, banged his elbow off the window? I want to point him out on the pod.
Remember last banged week? His elbow?
Yeah, he, like, banged a window.
Oh, did last he? Week. Oh, yeah. I don't remember. That's probably Bob. He's a former. He went to UW, too.
Well, I'm proud of that, but Bob, keep your balance, all right? I was ready to put the window unit right there and just pump his studio full of hot air.
His brother actually played for the Badgers, too.
Really?
Last name, Bosold. So it was before your time.
Okay.
But, yeah, I think he was... I think he holds a record, he said, for the most recovered fumbles.
Oh, nice.
No kidding.
For the Badgers.
Okay. Awesome.
I don't remember what position, though. It's like O-line or D-line. I'll have to ask him again.
Okay.
But, he graduated from Madison.
Small world.
He still goes. He's got season tickets for football.
Nice.
He's diehard.
Maybe there's another guy we put on the list for the pod.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He talked. I think it was just one. He might have had two brothers that played for the Badgers. I'm not quite sure. But he's from Madison, so. But, all right, boys, I'm looking forward to that conversation we
have.
Sounds
good. It'll be fun.
You got it. All right, 217 South Mills. Check it out on your favorite podcasting platforms, YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, X/Twitter, whatever the heck the kids are calling it now. I still say if you could type in twitter.com and it goes to it, it's still Twitter.
There you go.
Boys, we appreciate it. Always love chatting with you guys.
Sounds good. Great time.
Take care.
And that's going to do it for us on another quick episode of the Man Cave Podcast, brought to you by Hy-Vee and Toys and Ford. Big thanks to Joe and Bill for joining me every Thursday as we talk a little ball, talk about their past, and hear some good stories and such. So big thanks to them. And don't forget, be a friend. Tell a friend about the podcast. Take a few seconds to rate and review. 5-star rating, positive review. Wherever you listen to your podcast, that way others can find the podcast. And hit that follow and subscribe button. Till next time, I'm Dan Casper, and I will talk to you on the next episode of the Man Cave Podcast.